Welcome to Jackson's American Tales. I'm Jackson Jones. In this podcast, we're going to talk to ordinary people all about their extraordinary life stories.
My dad had said something to me out of high school. He said, "You should be a mortician."
In this week's episode, we're going to find out what may seem abundant with sadness is actually full of joy.
People grieve all different ways. And my biggest part is I don't want people to have the death of their pet be so miserable that they'll never do it again.
We talk to Mark Meinholtz, who operates a pet memorial service, and find out how you go from being an IT guy to helping people grieve properly.
I had to be a little bit crazy to leave a very secure, well-paying position to go to nothing.
Enjoy this episode of Jackson's American Tales. What do you do?
I run a memorial center for pets. So I do pet cremation and aftercare services.
We're going to get to the bottom of how it is you get to running a pet memorial service, because it seems like kind of job that maybe not cut out for everybody and maybe not cut out for the lighthearted, I would assume.
It's not cut out for everybody. It's not anything that I think somebody grows up thinking they're going to be doing when they get older.
I don't know too many kids that grow up firemen, policemen, yep. Operate a pet memorial service.
Yep. Nope. It's something you kind of just falls into your lap and seems to be what you're meant to do.
You know, as a pet owner, I haven't had the need for one of these services yet, but I do know life is fleeting. And, you know, as George Carlin once said about dogs and cats, what you're really getting is a mini tragedy. And at some point, you're going to have a really bad day. And I'm glad that there are wonderful people like you around to kind of help guide through that, because you know, I think when people lose a family member, a human family member, there yep. are support services, or there at least, you know, an outreach, you know, for that. But when you lose, you know, a pet, which is a member of the family, my dogs are members of the family. I always say I like my dogs more than 99.9999% of the rest of the world. I mean, they're in my top three, and I'm counting my wife and daughter. So
there you go. Uh-oh.
Where are you from?
I am from Madison myself. I was born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin.
What side of town?
West Sider.
Oh, West Sider.
Grew up all the way from Crestwood Middle or Elementary School and graduated from Memorial High School. My mother was a stay-at-home provider. She did daycare at home. And my dad worked in the computer industry. So it was prior to IBM 286 PC was my first PC that came out. And to get it to start, you had to put in a floppy disk drive. And that's what booted the system up. So kids, been around it for a while.
I've shown my daughter pictures of floppy disks. She thought they were coasters.
Yep.
Those had some kind of a cute coaster. No, this is how we used to turn the computers on. So was dad a very analytical type thinking guy? Because a lot of times those engineers, you know, they think of it differently.
I would say he's very conservative. He wasn't good with change. He went with the flow and kind of found his little niche that he liked. And I think he had one job his whole 50 years.
Wow,
I don't think he's ever moved.
That's impressive to be able to do that, to be able to find, because, I mean, heck, you won't find too many companies that have been around for that long now.
No, absolutely. He got out of the military, moved back home, and I think that was his first job.
So mom ran a daycare?
Mom did a lot of taking care of us kids growing up and then brought in a few other kids just to help bide some time, and ended up doing daycare afterwards and took care of my brothers and sisters' children as they grew older, and then my kids, and she took care of all my kids as well, and then always had another couple kids along the way. So
back in the day, you used to see more gender roles than you do now. Things were more defined than they are now. Did mom rule the house? Was that her spot? Or hey, outside these doors, that's fine, but inside these hallowed walls, it is mine.
Mom's probably was more in charge. Yes, Dad did the paycheck. Mom took care of everything else.
Yeah, he brought home the bacon, she'd fry it up, and yep. then make sure everybody else did what they were told.
Yep.
Love yep. that.
Pretty much.
So did you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older brother who's 10 years older. Actually, his birthday, he just turned 60 today, and a five-year-old older sister.
Okay.
And which gives you a little bit of my age.
So now, what was the dynamic with the siblings? Were you guys getting along a lot? Were you fighting?
Probably pretty average. My brother and I kind of got along, but we had such an age gap, we couldn't really do too much.
Oh, yeah.
My sister and I kind of probably fought more growing up. Post high school, my brother and I probably became extremely good friends. I worked with him for a number of years. He's definitely helped me over the years, and I probably got a lot closer with my sister as well post high school.
You know, it's funny when you say, you know, about average. My immediate thought when you said that was, oh, so your brother hit you with a rake too.
Yeah. Not quite the rake, but he did a lot of the teasing pieces and the boogeyman in the basement always.
Tell you were adopted?
I know. I never got that one.
So were you a good kid? Were you a troublemaker? What kind of kid were you?
I was a pretty good kid for the most part. I a little too nervous to get into trouble. It's probably my pace. I didn't like to get in trouble. I pretty much followed a lot of the rules. I always strayed a little bit, but nothing too drastic.
Okay, didn't want to make too many waves.
No. No, my sister unfortunately made more of the waves in the family. And I couldn't outdo that, and so I went the other direction.
So what did you want to be when you – what was the first thing you remember I want to be when you were a kid?
You know what? That was a struggle, and I think most kids – my kids are having the same struggle today. I really didn't know. I liked anywhere from construction and working with my hands. I looked at trying to go into the police services to be a police officer. I ended up – my dad gave me an opportunity to get into computers. So I started in the computer industry as just an entry-level position.
Was that your first job?
That was my very first job was actually cleaning offices. I was a janitor part-time after high school, and I did that. That was just a few hours a week. And then I also worked at a grocery store.
So did you have to go by and like clean people's desks and things like that?
Yep, vacuum and dust and toilets. Yep, I got to do all that good
stuff. So you had to go into the empty office building at the end of the day when everybody was gone?
Absolutely.
It gets kind of creepy when a building that is dark. So alive during the day, when you go there at night, even if it could be in the middle of the city, it's a regular nice building, it got a little creepy, doesn't it?
Yep, being young and going in there, yep, it was dark. A lot of times I went there before I even had a driver's license, so I used to bike to it.
So then did you have any other jobs between that and your dad getting you that entry-level job?
Yep, I worked as a down at the local grocery store. I used to do checkouts to all the way from stocking shelves to working in the meat mart, behind the counter with the meat department.
Do you remember the name of the grocery store?
I do.
What was it?
It's called Kanaki's Grocery Store.
Kanaki's? Is that still a meat market?
It is still here, yep.
Yeah,
it's off of Old Middleton Road.
Yep. So dad got you into computers and entry level into some computer work?
Yep, because I really didn't know what I was going to do. So I got into just doing running a laser printer.
What year is this?
Oh, boy. We're probably about 86.
Okay. So
87, maybe.
So some homes are getting actual personal computers. The computer is now, I'd say, the golden age of when it's really starting to take off.
It's just starting. Everybody's getting, yeah.
That's not a bad
the basic computer.
That's not a bad gig to get into, at that time.
Yep. And this was, I got into more of the mainframe side, which is the big computers versus the little desktops. So
how did you like that?
It was okay. It's intimidating. Machines are big, big and loud. So definitely intimidating.
So were you still just not really sure what you wanted to do? Or are you working a job like a placeholder until you find something that really jumps out at you?
I was actually going into school. I was going to MATC and a computer operations degree is what I was just going there for. So I was going there part-time there.
Okay.
Basically nights. Go there every weekday night. It worked at I think the job that I got first was probably, I think I stayed there probably about a year. And that's where I probably got a real reality of what a lot of work is, what third shift meant, a lot of working and no sleeping, no time to actually spend any of the money that you do make.
That's one good thing about third shift is as much as I have friends that have been on third shift for a number of years and, 10 years or more, and they still, no matter what, your sleep patterns are weird. They get off work, I think, at 6 a.m.
Yep.
So they'll go home like anybody else would. They'll eat some dinner. They'll run around and do some errands and things like that, but they got to wait for stuff to open up.
Yep.
And then they said, around like 2 o'clock, they'll go to bed and then get up and get ready to go back to work. And I was like, that's so weird. They said, your body never gets used to it. But like they said, you can't spend the money.
No, you don't. The hardest part for me was trying to figure out how to spend time with my friends.
Oh, yeah. No social life.
And you get to the weekend and I remember getting off work in the morning, go hop in a car, sleep in the car, and they'd wake me up when we get to wherever we're going. and that was my – That was my 3-hour nap. You do that on the weekends, and then you try to function again and go back to school. And, you know, so I used to get off of work or get off of school and then go to work.
So you're still doing some schooling.
So I was, for my 2-year degree, I was probably in there for 5 years.
You're just a super duper senior.
So I was, yes. It took me a while to get through it all.
Did you eventually finish and get your degree?
I did get a degree.
Good job. Congratulations. So now, while you're working this job and you're starting to get kind of a taste of the real world, you're in your early 20s, are you starting to kind of realize this isn't something I want to do? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel you see? Is something you're fighting towards?
No, still at this time, I had a good field to be in. Computers was definitely a growing financially. It's a good business to be in. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I did the computer operations. I worked for one of the big companies here in town. Spent some time there and ended up getting more into programming. And so then I did a lot of programming for probably the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
What was the social life at that time? Were you dating someone? Were you engaged?
I was probably married at that time.
Okay.
You're making me think about it.
Yeah. How long had you been married? Just a couple years?
Well, I have been married since 2001. So it's been a while.
Did you have any kids at this time when you're doing this?
Not at that time. I did not.
Okay. Just a new relationship and working. You're out there burning that midnight oil.
Pretty much working. Yeah.
How did the wife like that when you were on call all the time? As long as the paychecks came in, she was good?
Good for the most part. She had a similar job, not as intense as mine of after hours and stuff.
Okay.
But she knew the industry. She was in the computer side as well.
Where'd you meet your wife at?
At a previous company.
Where are we at after this? You're married. It's 2001. You're doing some programming. What's life looking like in front of you?
There was always talk about the company possibly getting bought out, being moved. Made you a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I was always, I had another company that I had started where I did a lot of snow plowing company. So I'd work my 8-hour shift and then come wintertime, I'd be plowing all night and go back to work again.
Pennies from heaven is what we call that in the snow plow industry.
It's money does fall from a tree is what I always say. Fall from the sky. It does. For some of us.
And a lot of it, if you can hit it up right, is correct.
Yep. Nope. It's a lot of work. So I did that for, just out of high school, truly. So probably in about 87, I bet you I started snow plowing for somebody else.
For somebody else, okay.
For a couple of years, and then I went on, I took over his accounts because they got out of it all, and so got me going, and then I got my own truck and started doing that as a second job, basically.
I've always said to people, and people don't listen to me, is if you want to make some good extra money and you've got a truck, go and spend a couple $1,000s, get yourself a nice Boss plow, throw that right there on the front of that thing, and then boom, wintertime comes on. Not this winter so much.
No.
But average winters here in Wisconsin where we get about 60 inches of snow,
right.
Normally you can make a good amount of money on a weekend, on a night. I mean, it's good to make some. It's hard work, but you can make some cash.
If you don't mind working.
Yes.
Yes. You got to understand it. You have to work.
You know, something else too, I was a snowplow driver for 10 years. People don't realize it's hard on your body to do that.
It is.
I remember when I would get done, I would either have a rub on my neck from the seatbelt, because you got to have that seatbelt on. Because if you hit a curb and you don't have the seatbelt on, you're in the steering wheel.
Oh, yeah.
That's number one. That's not comfortable. And then if you're backing up and you turn your neck, you don't realize how many times you strain and turn your neck in a night when you're backing up until you get home and you're like, I got a crick in my neck. I mean, it gets to you.
Nope. And then I had salters on my trucks too.
Oh, yeah.
So you're always lugging salt around. I use the bag salt. You'd move 2,000 pounds by hand every single snowfall.
Got to get up top and move the hopper around because, God forbid, you get a little bit of rain
stuck
in there and that gets wet. And then, now we got a brick inside there.
Yep.
Yeah, good times on that.
We could
do stories about snow plowing for days.
Yeah.
So you're moonlighting, doing some snow.
Some snow plowing. And then ended up just not having probably more the direction of it. I couldn't see myself being a programmer for the next 20, 30 years.
It didn't give you the satisfaction at the end of the day?
No, and a lot of kids come out of school that are all hyped up and gung-ho, had the latest technology. And I was always fine. I had the experience. I understood how things worked. But I just didn't see myself doing it for another 30 years. And was talking to a friend of mine and came up with an idea. Also, a friend of mine was actually a veterinarian doctor mm-hmm. as well, and who was seeing my dog at the time. And my dog was getting to be a senior. So the talks just kind of began, and it was just a thought, and thought about it, sat there and tried to look at pros and cons. And my dad had said something to me out of high school, which kind of stuck to me for whatever reason when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. He said, you know, he threw out there, he goes, you should be a mortician. And I'm like, what? I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't think so. But what's funny is, yeah, it lands back on my lap, and I'm like, you know.
Did you ever ask your dad why he suggested that for you?
No, it kind of just got shut down pretty quick, and I'm like, no, that's not me.
it almost seems like an insult. You know, I mean, right. However, I know some morticians that make a very good living doing what they do.
Nope, they do.
That almost seems like an insult. Like, yeah, your personality is so good, you should be a mortician.
You should be a mortician. Yeah.
So what's it like coming home and you got to have the conversation with the wife? It's a 50-50 and say like, hey, we make some money doing computers, but I want to do this.
I think she just. Well, I know she thought I was just nuts. Yep, probably about the best way to say it.
Hey, you got a good woman right there, and she should think you're nuts.
No, she thinks, you know, but I think she believed in me, knew, you know, that I didn't mind working, and definitely it was great support. I needed her throughout the whole process, for sure. It was definitely very scary. I had to be a little bit crazy to leave a very secure, well-paying position to go to nothing.
Absolutely.
But just debt.
I'm assuming, a cottage industry in the area. Were there other services that got into what it is your idea? Did you like check the market? Like, there is a need for this.
Yep. Nope. I looked at it. I had about a couple years of research of seeing what's around here, how they do it. They're kind of not what their business plan, but their concept. I wanted to take it to a whole different level of, you know, my dog over the years was kind of like you're saying, it not just a dog.
Yes.
Dogs aren't in the backyard in the kennel much anymore. They're all in the house. And if they're not in your bed, they're right next to you, mm-hmm. You know. And so I was looking at it and what kind of a concept kind of out of California. They did a lot of more of a funeral home style for pets. And I'm like, you know, I think that would work here. And I'll honestly, looking at what my skill sets are, I was not the techie person that all the kids are that are coming out. I got more in trouble at work because I was helping people. I always had somebody in my desk, you know, I was, you know, working with somebody or talking to somebody. And I was more of the team person. I'm not an I person at all. And so I was trying to evaluate where your skill sets are. And, you know, I thought, you know, okay, I like to help people. I was actually EMT for 13 years during all this other job, you know, throwing the EMT for 13 years through this process.
Okay.
And so I know how to take care of people. I know that it's not just the patient that you take care of, but you're actually taking care of everybody around the patient is just as important.
Sure.
And you get to work with pets. You know, granted, most of them are deceased, but I do get to see the others that come with them, you know, other family members.
The reason the people are sad is because they love their pets so much.
Absolutely.
And so if you look at it from that perspective, you're working in a field of love. You're not working in a field of death. It's a celebration.
I tried to look into the police, being a police officer at one time. The hardest part about that is most of the people that you work with don't want you there.
No.
You know, you're not a happy face.
You're not there because they're having a good day.
Correct. Okay. You know, I could spend 20, 30 years in the IS computer industry, but in the first 6 months to a year of doing what I'm doing, I've had more hugs from people and appreciating what you do than I ever have.
Computers don't give hugs.
Nope, they don't. And you're pretty expendable in that environment.
Yeah.
And here, what I, you know, preach to the people, my staff and stuff, the coolest thing about what we do is we do impact people's lives every day.
Mm-hmm.
What you say, what you do, how you act affects somebody. And that's the cool part about what we do. And you get to, you know, it's just helping people and their time of need. And that's a cool thing.
You know, it was really neat. I was just recently watching a video, and it was a guy talking about how in by 2030, machines are going to be doing a lot of our jobs. And to think about, if your job can be done by a machine, then you need to start focusing on soft skills, is what they call it.
Yep.
And you just kind of hit on that exact thing right there. Someone else could come in and do what it is that you do. And to be honest with you, eventually a computer will be able to program a computer. For us to think that artificial intelligence won't be able to do that is absolutely absurd. It will be able to. The technology is moving so much faster, and the faster the technology moves, the faster the technology moves, if that makes any sense. But what you found is ability to use your soft skills that a lot of people, I don't think, realize that they can tap into that and not only help other people, but provide for themselves by doing that as well.
Right.
So
totally.
What were the first steps in making this happen? You talked to the wife and you said, hey, this is what I want to do, and I've got this idea, but advertising that kind of thing or going on, is there a stigma of you're trying to capitalize off of my sadness?
The part is I kind of broke it down to truly what would I want and what are my needs. And I figure I'm a pretty average person. I'm a pretty average pet owner. I'm not extreme on either side. I'm somewhere in the middle.
You're not carrying them in a purse and you're not leaving them chained outside.
Nope, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, I'm somewhere in the middle. And so I basically broke down to what do I want and what would I want to do? And I basically built a business plan around what I think customers like me would want to have for their pets, and kind of put all the costs together and kind of put a final business plan and my monthly estimates and of costs, and said, okay, this is what I need to do. These are, type of income that I need to bring in to break even.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of decided so let's go for it. And hopefully I can, people can understand what I'm trying to do and get on board with us. And
so take us to that first customer, that first family that's got to get. Now, what you do isn't easy because you're dealing with emotions, and yeah, that can be a whole pile of a whole can of worms in there.
Yep.
But this first one, you're going in there. You don't. I'm guessing you don't really know what to expect. As much research as you can do, you really can't find out till it's trial by fire. What was that first one like?
Yeah, this isn't a job where you can go work someplace else very easily and then go take your skills that you learned and bring it here. You kind of start with what you think people are looking for. The part that's the first couple actually that came in that we did a true service for, I was terrified, truly. And a very nice couple. And they both were very teary with their pets, and rightfully so. They're ones that, as I find out, they rescue pets. Rescue seniors, so they do this off, have to do this often, unfortunately. But they thought they'd give us a try and went through the whole process, did everything we needed, to do and help them along the way. And they gave me hugs and said it was a wonderful experience, and they thanked me. And I didn't, see them again until another pet of theirs passed away. To add what's a little bit unique with this couple is probably their fourth pet over the years that they've come to me with. The one gentleman asked me, he goes, when I retire, I want to come here. And I'm like, well, that's quite an honor to say that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But the neat thing is he works for me today.
Really? He was your first customer that came in, and now he's one of your employees. And I think that goes back to what I said before, is when you hear we run a pet memorial service, and you think like there's a lot of people going in there being sad, but you give them the ability to grieve properly, to let a family member go the proper way with dignity. And I think there's a lot of love around that. And that really shows if someone wanted to retire, to then go and do that as well. I think that's pretty amazing.
No, it's cool. A lot of my staff they've reached out to me. The office manager that I have today reached out to me and said, you know, all I've heard is good things about your company. You know, if you have any openings, let me know.
Wow.
And pretty much everybody that I have that's how they got to me, is they've seeked me out. And that's quite an honor.
I
doesn't get any better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to make you feel good, make you feel like you're doing something really good for the community as well.
Yep.
So do you have any kids?
I have three kids myself.
How old are they?
They are 15, 14, and 12. So I have actually two in Middleton High School and one in Glacier Creek.
Do they know what it is that you do?
Yes, they do. It took a while for me to actually explain to them.
That's got to be difficult.
Oh, what daddy does.
Yes. Like my daughter, I joke around on the radio, I drink coffee, and I'm on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's a pretty simple thing to go right there. She's unaffected, doesn't even care,
nope.
Not impressed one bit. But trying to explain like that to a child has got to be difficult.
It is challenging, and some of it is going through our own experiences with our own pets. They've got to experience some things firsthand, and I've actually learned a lot on how kids react. In all three of us, one of our past pets, Xena, passed away, and I took him to the office. We did all the euthanasia and everything right there, and did all the services right there as we were there. And trying to understand how kids react, you know, and in each of my kids, one lets tears out right away, one holds the tears in until they finally just can't do it anymore, and then the other one giggles, and then finally breaks down, and because they just, that's how they're trying to react, and it teaches you how everybody, you know, there's not a set pattern for anybody that this is how you're going to act, this is what's going to happen. Everybody, and that's, you know, what makes everybody unique too. But it was a very good learning experience for me, just on understanding kids and how to involve them. Some of the things that I did do, we make a nice terracotta paw print, and so I made a paw print of Xena's paw for each of the kids to take home, and they all wanted one, which was great, and they all took them to school and shared them with their friends at school. And which was like, wow, okay. But it helped. There's something in that whole process that helped them grieve. Grieve well. I don't know how to say it. We mourned her loss. We did some things to help honor her, and we could move on and learn from it. It was a good experience. If you can have a good experience, it was good for all of us.
As wonderful as as a pet owner, and I think that, you know, the service that you do and what it is you're able to get up and do every day, I think is great. I'm guessing you don't get invited to a lot of career days.
No.
Which is a good thing. That's a pain in the butt.
The kids all know and talk to all the friends. I kind of know what I do, and some think it's neat. Some, you know, it's cross border. You know, some think it's neat. Some think it's weird. Some, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, I won't deny. Sure. I won't pretend like it's not weird because it is. I mean, it's 100%.
It's very unique.
It is. I mean, and if it wasn't, then you wouldn't have a job. I mean, if it was something that was so very commonplace, and I think that now as dogs and cats are becoming more and more a member of the family, you look back 20 years ago, it really wasn't so much like it is now. I mean, it really has really changed. It's almost like dogs and cats get to vote. My dog's got a political party influence. You know, if it wasn't, it wouldn't be as commonplace. But I think that's what makes it even more interesting, is that there's stigmas, you know, that are around that. There's, you know, a bit of a weirdness factor that is to that. But I think that you handle all of that with an incredible delicacy that I think also is incredibly important, because you don't so much work in dollars and cents. You work in emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just trying to help manage the emotions too, and help guide people and help them understand truly what is out there. Because honestly, when a pet passes, nobody really knows what to do. Nobody knows what happens.
Yeah.
And for us, it's trying to educate the public as much as we can that, yes, there are a lot of options. And some vet clinics are very good at it, and some kind of do more of the basic side of it. And I call them a little bit more old school, but it works for them. But for us, it's just trying to get you so you have a good educated decisions on what's right for you and just trying to help. People grieve all different ways. And my biggest part is I don't want people to have the death of their pet be so miserable that they'll never do it again. And I have people that'll say, that have come to us and have said, I'll never do this again. And I try to back them up and I go, let's rephrase that. Just say, I don't see me doing this again, but just never say never because you never know. In a good example, I had a lady quite a few years ago that just, it was really hard for her. And she's one that said, I'll never do this again. And I went through the same thing, explained to it. A week later, she calls me. She goes, you'll never believe what happened. And a rescued dog landed on her lap.
Fell in love.
And she's like,
they do that.
I have another dog. And she actually came by and shared them with us. And it's just, that's the part that makes what you do, makes you keep doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can for myself speak that I didn't know that these kind of things, happened. And I was one of those where, what do you do when your pet passes away? I used to date a girl, and when we were living together, she had a very old cat. It was like 18 years old. And we knew time was ticking, on old peaches. And I didn't know what to do. So what I did do is I told my best friend. I said, hey, just so you know, this cat's 18. I'm not sure this cat has 18 minutes left. It is an old cat. I don't know what to do. If this cat dies, I'm going to call you, and you're going to come over, and I'm going to leave. And, and you're going to figure out what it is you do. Because I don't know. I'm not sure if I can touch the body. I'm uncomfortable with those kind of things. Sure. And knowing that there are people out there to help guide through that. Because I thought, I guess you call a vet. Do they make house calls? Do I get a garbage? I don't know what to do. And I think that, for a pet owner, it really is nice to know there's people out there that have those resources now and can help people guide through that terrible situation.
Yep. No, and that's exactly, we field those questions often. And those are things, we do home pickups. I have, have my experiences from being an EMT. We kind of have the same process that I use on how to transport a body. It's just trying to do everything with dignity.
And that's
the bottom line is, the dignity in giving them what they deserve and helping and not making it a very difficult process along the way. It's just trying to get people to know that all these options are there. And it's a very hard thing to get out there.
Yeah. I haven't lost a pet. My parents' dogs have passed away, but I didn't live in the house at that time, and still very hard for them to go through. It was a great dog, but I do have a firsthand experience of some of the services that you provide when Officer Odin passed away, and I'd become friends with Officer Odin's human now Captain Plish of the UW Police Force, and one of the most amazing things that I'd ever been a part of was the day that Odin crossed the Rainbow Bridge. Now, a doctor came out. Are you guys the ones that find the doctor, or is that the vet that does that? Were you guys a part of that when they came for the home visit?
In that situation, by all means, we have access to find doctors that will go to your home. Mm-hmm. They use their own doctor that came to their home, which is very common. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. But that is something that he had set up, and he just, their department has worked with us before. And so they set all the other arrangements, the transportation and arrival and everything at our place was all set up separately, directly with us.
Speaking on dignity, like we said before, the procession that Officer Odin had was one of the most beautiful and amazing things.
Absolutely.
And when the end part of that was at Memorial Pet Services, I then knew this place must really be legit at what it is that they do, because there was, 60 officers in your parking lot at that time?
Yeah.
There was tears. This was a funeral for an officer, because they had lost an officer.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't like they brought it into some warehouse where some guy does this part time. It was right. very clear that they had trusted you with not only a member of their family, a member of their department, and a member of their community. And when I was a part of that, I'd never spoke to you. I'd never seen anything about right. it, but I knew right away that there must be something to this business here because these people wouldn't trust them with something that's so delicate and so dignified.
And thank you. It's something being part of those services. Every single emotion in your body that you can physically have, you'll have on that day. You know, you'll have tears. You'll be just overwhelmed with in awe.
Do you get emotional?
Unfortunately, yes. I struggle with it because I feel like I relate a lot to them. Mm-hmm. It definitely gets to me.
You're a person?
It seems to be the older I get. I don't know if it's the more emotional I get with it, but ask my staff. They kind of laugh at me as like, okay.
He's at it again.
Yeah, Mark's gone. I struggle talking some of them because I feel like I connect with them and I get what they're going through. I've been there on my own little ways, but being able, the whole procession, being part of police services, it's incredible. We've actually developed a protocol for the police departments so the officers know what to do. And because most of them don't.
Yeah. Most pet owners don't in general.
And so we're just getting this protocol out right now. Trying to get it out in front of all the departments that have dog handlers and stuff. And we've had a lot of the local departments help us, even one from Janesville that we had a service a couple years ago for one of the Janesville officers. And we did a procession all the way. We transported the dog all the way to our center in most emotional wreck I've ever been. I was more nervous about seeing, making sure I didn't run into the police car in front of me because my eyes were all watered over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you're like, oh, this is, and just seeing the support that's out there, it's just, like I said, it's an overwhelming experience. What you saw with Odin, I wasn't in the procession, but you probably saw officers standing on the side of the road.
Yep.
You saw people that you're just like dumbfounded that this is just a very cool experience to be part of. It'll stick with you forever.
Knowing that where we ended from the beginning, the procession, and I knew what was, they were in good hands there. I'd never been in there, but it was very clear that they trusted you with that. And I think that's wonderful that someone can decide to do that. You know, you're taking on a lot emotionally, every day. My co-host and I, we get a lot of pats on the back for doing Radiothon every year. And we raise a lot of money for the Children's Hospital, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And we got to sit down, and we got to talk to moms and dads, and we got to hear some really sad, really scary stories. And even the positive ones, they went through hell, but they came on their side. But the hell part of it, and it gets you. And after that, people are like, oh, you know, them 3 days must have been rough. And they were. But I always say is I'm going to go home on Friday night, and I'm not going to go back for another year. The nurses go there every day.
Yeah.
You and your staff go there every day. The people that have to go there the one time, I mean, that's hard. But then you guys have to do that every day. But you have to carry a certain dignity with you when you do that. And I think I can, you know, I've never had to go through it. And in one day I will. And I know I can probably speak for the people that you serve that you definitely handle that with a dignity. And you give them that little bit of happiness on a day where there isn't a lot sitting laying around.
Nope. And that's something we try. You're not going to fix anything. You're not going to make miraculously everything better.
Isn't that hard to do as a guy, to not be able to fix anything? That's one of the biggest problems I have. Like, my wife and daughter are emotional, and I'm like, okay, let's fix this. And they're like, it doesn't work that way. And I'm like, nah, we can fix it. Get some glue. We can put this back together. And that's hard, isn't it?
I've had that talk with my wife, and she exactly, just listen. Don't fix anything.
Yes,
and
yes.
I've learned.
That's a skill.
I've learned.
That's a real skill.
Yes. You're just there to help, and you hope people appreciate it. And yeah, we're human too, and that's the hardest part is we try to do our best at all times, but it's a hard thing to do every single day.
Well, I appreciate you coming in and talking, and I appreciate Memorial Pet Services. What's the website and all that stuff? It's a service, and people, if they need this service, they need to have the information. Well, how can they get a hold of you?
They can find us on our website, which is memorialpetservices.com. or you can just call our office at 608-836-7297. A lot of the stuff is on our website. There's some questions there. You can even email us. It's just info@memorialpetservices.com. Ask us questions. That way we get email all the time. We have people calling constantly just for questions, setting up arrangements and things like that. So it's, or just come out and step out and say you want a tour and or see what we do. We have a lot of people that do pre-planning. And the thing is, it's just knowing what to do and knowing what happens when the time comes takes a lot of the stress off when the day does get there, because you know what to do. And we all get it. It's a hard thing to talk about. It's a hard thing to plan. But just like on the human side, it is important.
Sure.
And the more you're prepared, the easier it'll be for you when you get there to manage and make good decisions for yourself.
Well, I appreciate what it is that you do, and I know that our community appreciates that as well. And I also appreciate you coming in, sitting down, and taking some time to talk to me. Not everybody's always comfortable talking into a microphone, and I think that you did a fantastic job telling your story. And it's a nice peek behind the curtain, and to remind people that, you know, when you hear I run a memorial pet service, I'm not running a doom and gloom operation. I'm running a love and joy and happiness operation. And, you know, something that I like to say about when somebody passes away and about the grieving process is don't mourn the death, celebrate the life. Right. And I think that you guys really do a great job of helping people celebrate the lives of a member of their family, possibly the one that gets on their nerves the least. And I know that my dogs are that. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales. I really hope you enjoy this podcast. And if you do, please tell your friends about it. That's how social media works. Click share, let them know that you like it. Or heck, if I annoy the biscuits out of you, maybe I'll annoy your friends as well. And that's kind of funny. So what I'm getting at is click share, and then please tune in next week. Thank you so much for listening to Jackson's American Tales.
Yeah, I better record it. I don't know if I can do it again.
Oh, what a great season Jackson's American Tales has been, and it's not over yet. We saved the best for last. Next week, the bearded wonder Walter Kinnair is stopping in, and he's got an amazing story that you are not going to believe.
Oh, yeah, I went to 7 colleges.
But you know what they say, all work and no play makes Walter a dull boy.
Down in Rockford, they had 5 or 6 go-go bars.
But his life wasn't all peaches and cream. There were some ups and there were some downs.
I literally lived on the street for a year. I ate at a soup kitchen. I mean, I slept on a park bench. I was that guy.
But all in all, it's an amazing story. Check out next week's episode of Jackson's American Tales with Walter Kinnair. Subscribe, click like, drop a comment and a rating, and share with a friend.